This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Welcome in. It is Overtime on The Fan. Toby Altizer with you for about an hour and 15 minutes till we turn it over to some Caps hockey tonight on The Fan. Also got two Monday Night Football games. I want to talk briefly about those in a little bit because you look at the Falcons, and obviously they're trailing Washington at this point for that final wild card spot. A loss from them tonight, you feel really, really good about your chances of getting in, regardless of what happens the rest of the way. You feel good regardless right now. You know, you win one or two games, you're likely in, especially if you win two games. If you win one game, you're likely in at this point. But there's also another scenario that I don't know that we've really talked about because I don't know that we've really considered that this is a possibility. There's another possibility that we could start changing what we root for, and it could change some of the matchups here. So we'll talk about that coming up in a little bit as well. But I want to start with the game yesterday. Obviously, disappointing in terms of the way that they played, specifically in the second half. But I don't know that I feel as awful today. They won the football game, right? That's the main thing. They went down to New Orleans coming out of a bye and they won the football game. There's no excuses to be made for how they played, but the most important thing was leaving New Orleans with a win, and they did that. Now, you can't play the way that they did in the second half, and you can look at a ton of things. You can look at the fact that Darren Rizzi decided to go with Jake Haener, who didn't look like an NFL quarterback in the first half, and Spencer Rattler comes in and outscores you in the second half. Do they lose that football game if Spencer Rattler starts the game and plays the entire game? Who knows? Maybe that's a possibility. I don't know. There are plenty of things you can look at where this team did not play well, they didn't do things to the best of their ability, but they still found a way to win, and that is the most important thing. But I think the biggest thing coming out of yesterday that we learned is how important Tyler Biadasz is. Tyler Biadasz is so important for them. He helps set the protections, and he really helps in the run game. We talked about this, and I brought this up because to me, they're in that three-game stretch where they went on a losing streak. Then they bounced back against Tennessee, and then you saw it once again yesterday. The key to those games wasn't whether Jaden was healthy or not. That played into it some. It wasn't the effectiveness of the run game, because the reason I think the effectiveness of the run game left during that losing streak and yesterday was the interior of that O-line was horrible during the losing streak, and it was horrible again yesterday. And there was a reason that there was some trepidation going into the Tennessee game, because you're facing Jeffrey Simmons, who is one of the best interior defensive linemen of the league. You're facing T'Vondre Sweat, who is just a massive human being. And I don't know if you saw the highlight from yesterday. He ended up with a pick, stiff arms a guy. It's a 360-plus pound defensive tackle. And yet they dominated that defensive front. Yesterday, you're going up against a team that has given up the sixth most rushing yards in the league to this point, and is giving up 4.9 yards per carry, the second worst in the league, only behind Carolina. Matter of fact, Washington is only giving up 4.8. So somehow the Saints are worse than Washington's run defense, and we know how bad their run defense is. And yet they weren't able to get anything going on the ground yesterday, aside from Jaden Daniels. You know, you finish the game 35 carries for 137 yards. But if you take out the 11 for 66 from Jaden, which a lot of that is from scrambles and Jaden doing Jaden things, Brian Robinson was 21 for 65, so just over 3 yards a carry. McNichols had 2 carries for 4 yards, and Chris Rodriguez had 1 carry for 2 yards. That's just under 3 yards a carry. I believe it's 24 carries for 71 yards. That is not good. That is not good. And this offense depends on being able to run the football, because that's the basis of everything. You know, that's where I think you have to give credit to Kliff and what he's changed going from his previous stops to here is this is the basis of their offense. It's not you know, throwing the ball all over the yard and some of the creative things that he does and some of the gimmicky things that he can get into. No, it's running the football, and a lot of times it's handing the ball off in between the tackles. Yes, it's a read option, but being able to run the ball up the middle with Brian Robinson is a huge part of their offense. And during that three-game losing streak, that's something that they didn't have. Against Tennessee, it returned. And then it disappeared again coming out of the bye week. Another thing we also have to think about, too, is this team has now come out of a mini bye and lost to Dallas. They've come out of a full bye and almost lost to New Orleans. I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's something. I mean, they looked fine in the first half. You know, the possessions were a little bit limited. The clock seemed to roll pretty quickly through there. But I thought, you know, up 14-0 at the half, you felt good. In the second half, though, I don't know what happened in the locker room, whether it was just coming out being a little complacent, feeling a little too good about yourself in the second half. I'm not sure, but something needs to be fixed there. But specifically back to the run game, it is so important to be able to have that for their offense, and they just didn't have that yesterday. And I think you saw that Tyler Biadasz is so important to this offensive line. Biadasz is huge in the run game. You saw on the scramble in that 3rd and 14 where Jaden Daniels just spectacular scramble on 3rd and 14 to pick up the first down. But who's the first person he goes and talks to? He's frustrated. Yeah, he picked up the first down, but he was frustrated because it wasn't the way that he wanted to, and it was something where he had to work outside the structure and make a play because someone else failed at their job. Who does he immediately go to? Michael Dieter, backup center. They are having issues if they can't, in the middle of that offensive line, 4 out of the last 5 games, and luckily they found a way to win 2 of those games. Tennessee, they played really well, and that's the lone exception out of the last 5 games that they've played well in the interior. But yesterday, they did not play well inside, and some of the sacks were on Jaden. I get that. 8 sacks, 37 yards lost on those sacks. I get some of those sacks are on Jaden holding the ball a little bit long and maybe just feeling a little bit more comfortable back there than he should have. But the offensive line was terrible. That was the other part of this. They couldn't run the ball during the losing streak. And I think the interior of the O-line was the biggest reason for that. I also thought Jaden didn't look comfortable. And a lot of people chalked that up to the rib injury. A lot of people thought that had something to do with that. And I didn't necessarily buy that as much. I'm sure it factored in, but to me, whenever he missed a throw, whenever it was something that was a layup that he would usually make and he missed it, that to me was the rib injury. And occasionally, some of his decisions to slide or not try to get an extra yard or whatnot, some of those were rib injury. But when it came to, he's just not comfortable in the pocket and some of those things, that was not rib injury to me. That was the offensive line, and specifically the interior, was not very good. And Coleman had his struggles yesterday, too, at the left tackle spot. But I think the interior of that O-line really has to get things figured out. And honestly, maybe it's simple as if Biadasz were out there yesterday, maybe it's different. But there was a huge problem inside. And I think you saw that affect every single part of what they were trying to do. They couldn't run the football. I thought Cliff introduced some new stuff that would have allowed them to be more successful if you combine that with what they've been able to do all year. You know, they moved Terry around. They had him line up on the right side of the field, which is unique, right? But they had him motion around. They were doing some different stuff. But when you can't even consider running the football, I mean, because here's the other thing. Brian Robinson had a long run of 20 yards on the day. So let's take that run out, because that was honestly the anomaly of the day. 20 for 45, with the exception of the 20-yard run, 2.25 yards a carry, that ain't going to get it done. And so what do you have to do if you're only averaging 2 yards a carry? You can't continue to run the football because you're not getting anywhere. The reason that this offense has been successful this year, and I thought Linnell and I talked about this over the Thanksgiving holiday, I thought this was a big part of and really explains their offense this year. You think about the Chiefs when they were, you know, really at their heights as an offense. They were explosive. They were down the field. And it was built off of that. Well, defenses now have kind of shifted to take away some of that explosiveness. And Washington kind of fits perfectly into that modern feeling of, okay, we're not going to allow them to go deep. We're not going to allow them to have a 60-yard touchdown. We're going to make them drive the length of the field. We're going to make them have a sustained drive. Well, Washington is built, and that's kind of how they've operated all year on offense. It's efficiency over explosiveness. It's efficiency. And so that means you need to be getting 3 and 4 yards on the ground every time. Specifically, you want to be averaging over 4 yards a carry. You want to be able to depend on, okay, in this situation, I can turn around and hand it to Brian Robinson, and we're in 2nd and 6. You're not in 2nd and 9. You're not in 2nd and 12, but you're moving forward constantly. And the way that this offense has been built is on that efficiency. And the fact that they couldn't run the football yesterday is a little bit concerning. Maybe it's Biotish, but is Biotish the whole reason they weren't able to run it? Maybe the answer is yes, because he was there against Tennessee, a decent defense, in a lot of ways a good defense, and they had their way running the football. I mean, heck, first play of the game, first run play of the game, Brian Robinson's gone for 40 yards, right? That's something that they didn't have at all yesterday. So I think we learned the importance of Brian Robinson, but Tyler Biotish, but also the importance of that run game to the offense, because that's also going to help you put that game away. When you're up 14-0 at half, you should win that ball game. You should. And it shouldn't be difficult. Even though they didn't really do anything offensively in the second half, the defense has got to be better. The defense needs to be able to play four quarters. The play that really irked me was the deep play to MVS. And you've got two safeties right there, and both of them look like they're catching a punt. And somehow MVS jumps in front of them and catches it. How is one of them not playing the football and the other not playing the free safety center fielder type there and being ready if it's overthrown and picking that off? How are both of them just sitting there thinking for the pick? You can't allow the catch. The number one thing is you cannot allow the catch. Then pick the ball off. I thought that was horrible. If you remember, they get that chunk play. Then the next play is the double pass to Alvin Kamara for the touchdown. Seemed like that kind of got their offense going a little bit. You can't allow them up off the mat. And they did with some of the things defensively. So defensively, they've got to play better. But you've got to be able to do something offensively on the ground. That's how you sulk a game away from. If they were playing a better football team yesterday, they lose that ball game despite leading 14-0. This offense usually is able to win when they're ahead like that because they can take some sustained drives. I want to give you an example. I saw someone tweet about this. You want to know how to play winning football against a good football team in the NFL? I hate giving this team credit because I can't stand them. Listen to this drive chart in the second half of the Eagles and Steelers game. Get ready for this, Chris, because this was jarring when I saw this. This is the entire second half. The Philadelphia Eagles started with the ball in the second half. They got a field goal to put them up 20-13. Then the Pittsburgh Steelers fumbled. Then the Eagles scored a touchdown. Then you had a punt from the Steelers, and then the Eagles ran out the clock. 3 possessions for Philly, 2 possessions for Pittsburgh, and they ran the game out.
That's an entire half?
That's an entire half. half of football. The Philadelphia Eagles, this is how they won the game yesterday. Going in at half, it was 17-13 Philadelphia. 13 plays, 47 yards, 7 minutes off the clock to get a field goal. They go up 20-13. The Steelers fumbled. Then the Eagles got the ball back. 13 plays, 74 yards, 6.5 minutes. Now they're up 27-13. The Steelers were able to drive the ball a little bit. They decided to punt it, and the Steelers never got the ball back because, I mean, this is one of the all-time drives for Philadelphia, by the way. 21 plays, 88 yards, 10.5 minutes to end the game. I mean, that is ridiculous. Absolutely insane. I'm not saying you're going to be able to do that, because that's an anomaly, to be able to hold the team to 2 possessions in the entire second half, but that's a credit to Philadelphia for being able to do some stuff. And even then, they weren't able to do their typical run game yesterday. They were having to pass the ball more, but they still ran for a 131 on the ground. Washington needs to be able to run the football. I think we all understand that. And I think we saw yesterday that when the team can't run the football, I really, really like Jaden. I don't know if he's fully at the point yet where you can just say full Joe Burrow style, where they can't. Joe Burrow has been an MVP caliber player this year because they just put the team on his back on offense and say, figure it out. And for the most part, he has. I don't know that Jaden's fully there yet. He doesn't need to be. Obviously, he's a different style. He can run and he can do some of those things. He was spectacular yesterday, with the exception of a couple of missed throws, and some of the sacks were problematic as well. But I thought he played fairly well. But you've got to have a run game so that it's not all dependent on him, because we've already seen, too, when some of these good teams come to town, or when they play some of these good teams, they understand how important Jaden is, and they understand that they can't let him win, and so they take him out of the quarterback run game. And if you're going to depend solely on his arm, maybe down the line he can win it for you, and who knows, maybe if you got into a game right now, he could still find a way to do it, but make it easier on him, and you need that run game. And so hopefully next week against Philadelphia, you get Tyler Biadasz back. Hopefully you're able to move the ball. I mean, we saw what Jalen Carter did the last time that they faced this team, and he was just he just wrecked the entire offensive game plan. That can't happen again. You need that interior O-line to play better. To me, if the interior O-line is able to shore things up, then you can see the offense get back to what we've seen it do before when it's scoring 30-plus, 40-plus points. But if they're going to struggle inside, it's tough for Jaden, and specifically it eliminates the run game, and then it kind of makes your offense not even close to being as explosive as it needs to be, because it's still built on the fact that you can move the ball on the ground. Efficiency over explosiveness, and if you don't have efficiency, this team doesn't have explosive players, frankly. I outside of Terry McLaurin, who's explosive that you can get the ball to? They just don't have it. So efficiency is king. They didn't have that yesterday. They just didn't have it. Let's take a break. When we come back, I want to talk about Marshon Lattimore. We saw this dude out on the field, and we didn't hear his name because they never threw it towards him. Now, New Orleans knows not to throw it to him. I'm curious how he looks against Philadelphia and what happens when Jalen Hurts, whether he decides to challenge him with A.J. Brown or Devontae Smith, whoever he's covering. But we saw an immediate impact to this defense, and we got the answer to who goes to the bench. We'll talk about it next here on The Fan. Welcome back. It's Overtime on The Fan. Toby Altizer taking you up until Caps Hockey, 7:45. Taking on, who are they playing again tonight? Gotta double check that. Taking on the Stars. That's
Stars
in Dallas tonight.
Yeah. G and D are talking about, sure, I guess they hadn't won in Dallas for like a long time or something. So
it's been a minute, I guess. It's been a minute. So hopefully they can get it done. I mean, heck, I think they're on a 10-game road winning streak. How crazy is that? I mean, this Caps team has been fun, by the way. Like, we were talking about this, kind of debating this a while ago, talking about who's the best DC coach right now. Coach Carbs might be that guy. Coach Carbs has been, he's gotten so much out of this group, so credit to him. I mean, this team has been rolling. Even when Ovi went down, it took them a little bit. They reset, now they're rolling again. Hopefully Ovi's back relatively soon, and he's been skating. It's been awesome to watch this Caps team this year and take on the Stars tonight in Dallas. So the Commanders on offense, we talked about the importance of the run game. We saw the importance of Marshon Lattimore on the defensive side of the football. He makes his debut yesterday, and he was spectacular. Absolutely spectacular in his debut. Didn't get targeted once. 53 snaps, zero targets. That's incredible. They didn't even want to go to his side of the field. They didn't even bother. That's something that I'm curious to see how that carries over into Philadelphia next week. Is it something where they're going to be willing to throw? I mean, he's facing his former team. They don't have a true number one right now with all the injuries, so they probably just said, don't even bother going to his side, maybe. I'm curious, you know, if he going to follow A.J. Brown around? And he's going to end up on either Devontae Smith or A.J. Brown. Who's covering the other one? What are they doing? But regardless, in his debut, he was everything you bargained for. And so it's about keeping him on the field now, but he's going to make a huge difference for this defense. We also got the answer as to who goes to the bench. Remember, the big debate was, what are you doing when Lattimore comes back? Because the starters before that were Benjamin St. Juste on the outside, Mikey Sanristil on the outside, Noah Igbinoghi in the slot. And we got the answer, and a pretty big answer, by the way. Really big answer. Like, it wasn't something where anybody split snaps. No, we got the answer. So just taking a look at those four guys. Lattimore played 53 snaps out of 55 plays. We got the answer for the other guys. Mikey Sanristil played 50 snaps. He was never going to the bench. There was no question about that. But Noah Igbinoghi played 38 snaps. Benjamin St. Juste played three. Three snaps for BSJ on defense. And by the way, on one of those snaps, he still ended up with a penalty. So, I mean, BSJ making an impact in just three plays. But we got the answer. They're clearly going to leave Sanristil outside. Noah Igbinoghi is going to stay in the slot. And that's what I've been advocating for. So the reason that I wanted that is multiple things. Long term, I think it helps you out because Mikey Sanristil is going to get to learn some position versatility. This is a guy that long term is probably going to be in the slot. You know, that's where they drafted him to play. Maybe they had some eye of him being able to play inside and outside, but I don't think they're going to, you know, plan on him being an outside corner for his career. I think this is a 1 year and occasional fill-in spot sort of thing. He's going to be playing inside. But Benjamin St. Juste playing, just, he's not consistent enough. He doesn't show up in the big spots. And so I think having Sanristil kind of learn that inside-outside is more valuable than just saying, let's kick him back inside and have St. Juste out there. Because I think in terms of coverage, it's been kind of a wash between Igbinoghi and Benjamin St. Juste. And if I had to choose one, I would take Igbinoghi because he's going to be in the slot. And that allows Sanristil to stay on the outside against some of the better receivers. So to me, that was never a question as to what I would have done. It seems like they sided with what I would have done. I'm curious to see if that continues, if maybe they start mixing in BSJ and some other packages just to see, because they were playing more three safety looks, and I'm not a huge fan of Percy Butler. I don't know that they're a big fan of him, it seems like. They get him involved a lot more than I would defensively. He's made some nice plays on special teams. Defensively, I haven't loved what he's done. He was in there right away with the first group out there on defense. I don't necessarily love that, but I think sending Benjamin St. Juste to the bench made the most sense. You know, at some point, you can fall in love and be enamored by the size and the speed and the length and all that stuff. You know how many people look like basketball players? You know how many people look like baseball players, look like football players? I mean, heck, you know how this is, Chris. Like, how many people play college football? D1, D2, D3, NAI, all these stuff. How many people play college football, and how many of them look like football players, and their body is built that way, and they have the long arm? How many of them just can't play football well enough to be a pro?
Yeah.
Right? There's a reason it's the elite of the elite. I'm glad that Benjamin St. Juste looks like a professional, and he has the look of an elite corner. He's not, though. He's just not.
Seems to have some really bad habits, you know?
He does. And, you know, maybe it's something if he were drafted somewhere else and developed a little bit differently and gotten the appropriate coaching, maybe he could have been molded into something better. Like, who knows? But unfortunately for him, that's not the case. I mean, he's very grabby. He's got the skills, but it doesn't really matter. Like I've talked about before, people love to come at me and say stuff about him as a corner, say, well, he's not always bad. It's such a tough position. It really is. I understand how tough the corner position is. It's why there are so few elite ones. But when you think about really good corners, they don't consistently have spots where they have penalties and give up plays late in ball games. And he does on a consistent basis. It happens all the time. And so you might be out there for 40 pass snaps and 35 of them you're good. You're playing perfect coverage for 35 of them, but you give up 5 for a buck 20 and 2 touchdowns in the others. Sorry, you didn't have a good game. That's just the nature of the beast. It sucks. It really sucks. But that's the nature of the beast. I can't have a guy, because you don't know when those 5 plays are going to show up, Chris. Like, it's one thing if, you know, if I know for a fact that those 5 plays are going to come in the first quarter and he's going to be nails the rest of the game, cool. Whatever. Fine. But that's not how it works. You don't know when those 5 plays where he's going to be out of position, he's going to make the wrong read, he's going to get grabby and give up a pass interference. You don't know when those things are going to happen. I think that's why they don't want him on the field. And you saw that. I mean, it's a third down, an opportunity to get off the field. And I'm sorry, the other notion that I heard, the narrative that I was told was, well, when Marshon Lattimore returns, Benjamin St. Juice is going to be on number 2, so he'll be fine. Who the heck was the receiver he got a penalty on yesterday? I never even heard of the guy. What is it, Kevin Austin Jr.? So I don't know who that guy is. It's not Chris Olave. It's not Rashid Shaheed. Sorry. I just don't think BSJ is very good. And they're not going to put him on the field a whole lot. Maybe they can find a way to use him. I don't know. And to me, the other thing, people that are worried about, like, well, let's see if he can play safety. Frankly, I don't care about experiments at this point. This is why I also said that they should never have kept Jamin Davis for as long as they did. On the last year of a contract, why do I care about experimenting? Someone else can figure that out down the line. I need you to be able to help me. Otherwise, whatever. It's the last year of his contract. If I had to bet, he's not back next year. So he's now a depth corner. He's ahead of Michael Davis. If you need someone on the field, he'll step out there. Otherwise, I don't need to worry about seeing if he can play safety. I don't need to worry about seeing if he can fit in this. Nope. He's a depth guy, because chances are he's not back next year. So Igbinoghene stays in the slot, Lattimore on the outside, and you got Mikey Sanders still outside as well. And that's how you line up from now on. And they also, it seems like they have safeties that they like more than St. Juice if they're going to throw him out there like a Percy Butler. And heck, I was happy to see Derek Forrest on the football field. If you asked me who I'd rather see, I would much rather see Derek Forrest out there than BSJ. Just my opinion. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll wrap up our thoughts on the game yesterday. We'll start taking a look at the 2 Monday night games tonight. You're listening to Overtime on The Fan. Welcome back. Overtime on The Fan. Toby Altizer with you for another 20 minutes or so, and then we'll turn it over to Caps Hockey as they take on the Stars in Dallas tonight. So wrapping up the discussion on the game yesterday, one thing I wanted to talk about is I don't quite understand why some people were so frustrated by the decision to kick the field goal from 54 yesterday. We always talk about being aggressive. We always talk about, you know, going forward on fourth down with Dan Campbell and some of these things. And a thing last night that I saw that really drives me nuts about coaches is we try to be more aggressive and the way that we attack these things with the analytics and all these different things. And what does it say? Go forward or not? Win probability, all this stuff. The thing that drives me nuts about some of these things last night that I saw was how Matt LaFleur just let the clock keep running at the end of the first half because they're so scared to give the ball back to the other team before the half with, like, 25 seconds? What are you so scared about? 25 seconds? It's one thing to say, I don't want to give it back to them with a minute and a half, but, like, 20 seconds? They end up screwing themselves because they get down to the one because of a pass interference. They don't have time to run a play. They have to end up kicking the field goal, and they're not able to at least take a shot to put a touchdown on the board before the half. So to me, some of that stuff is annoying. Like, everyone wants people to be more aggressive now, right? Like, everyone wants to see constant pedal to the metal. And because it's a field goal, people don't view what Dan Quinn did yesterday as pedal to the metal, but it was. It's a 54-yard field goal. If he was kicking it from 70, I get it, saying that it's a dumb move. He's kicking a 54-yard field goal. 54 yards. That's makeable by most of the kickers in this league. Heck, Greg Joseph can make that kick. Sure, he struggled. Sure, he's not consistent. But to me, the issue there is not with Dan Quinn saying, I'm going to try to ice this game. That's an aggressive move there. He understands the possibility he could give the ball to the Saints where he did and allow them to have a shorter field with a backup or third-string quarterback, however you want to view Spencer Rattler, with the chance to go win the ball game. He's not an idiot. He understands those things. But he could also win the game. It's the same decision that we talk about all the time with, do you go for two like the Saints did? What are they doing? They're trying to win the ball game. I don't quite understand how people are frustrated he didn't punt there. Why would you punt? You can win the ball game on that kick. They missed. And I'm a results guy. I'm not a process guy as much as some people are. I enjoy talking about the process and some of these things, but I think the results matter than some people talk about it like when they're very process-driven. I'm just not as much that way. I'm big time into the results and what ultimately happens. But yeah, the results didn't end up well there. They didn't end up going the Commander's way. They missed the kick.
Well, Toby, hold on.
But they can also.
What if they had gone for it on fourth? Some people say they should have just gone for it, you know, kept Jaden out there instead of kicking it at all.
But it's a 54 yarder. Like,
well, I mean,
I understand that too.
Extreme aggressive, right? Like, that's also another, right?
Sure. I'm trying to look. What was it? It was going to be fourth and. Well, the problem is it's fourth and 16. From the 36.
I guess he just got it. Yeah.
If it's fourth and six, you know, maybe. But also, it's the 36-yard line. Like, come on. The issue here is not that Dan Quinn decided to kick the field goal. The issue is that this team can't find a stupid kicker. Like, that's the issue. 54 yards. I mean, heck, you look at Dallas. They cross midfield. They feel like they're in field goal range. Why can't Washington find that? I mean, even when they had Seibert, they were like, anytime they were outside the 30, it was like, I don't know. Whereas Brandon Aubrey trots out there anywhere inside the 50, and you're like, all right, 3 points at least for Dallas.
So did you hear?
They've got to find somebody.
Did you hear that Matthew Wright of the Chiefs was let go because Butker's coming back, and I mean, he could be coming. I don't know. I don't have any inside information, of course, but you know. The guy won, like, the special teams player of the week, like, a week ago, and then he just got cut this week. So, you know.
I mean, try him out. I mean,
sure,
Matthew
not,
Wright
right?
he's had some opportunities before and hasn't always been great, but just find somebody, right? This is why I don't blame him for trying Cade York earlier in the year, Adam Peters, when people were like, whoa, idiot, what are you doing? Like, Cade York can at least knock it through from 54. Now, he at least can kick at 54. No idea if it's going to go between the uprights. We saw week one that didn't happen for him. He didn't knock any through the uprights. But at least keep trying until you find one, because to me, that's the issue, not as much the decision-making there. That's aggressive. You know, like, that's what they need to be doing. I mean, we saw this team too, by the way, when they were playing Dallas and they settled for a field goal or decided to punt, I can't remember exact scenario there, and didn't go for it on a fourth and short. Yesterday they went for it, and it ended up in a crazy play where Jaden has to dive over the pile, and did he fumble or did he not? That was crazy. I don't want to see that style of play again, but that was aggressive. People just look at the field goal and don't understand that that's an aggressive play there. I also... You're going to punt from the 36-yard line? I don't know. It's just, I understand that it didn't work out and people were so miffed at the idea that he would trust a kicker that's been inconsistent, but you also have the guy on your football team. If you didn't trust him at all, why is he there? I know he just got signed off the street. I understand all of those things. But figure out the stupid kicker situation so we're not criticizing Dan Quinn for kicking a 54-yard field goal. It's 54 yards. You know, if this were 10 years ago, 54 yards would have been something. In the modern NFL, 54 yards should be like a 70% make, it feels like. You should feel good about making it from 54. And yet somehow people are turning on Dan Quinn because of that decision yesterday. I think that's just wild. I think it's crazy because I think that's trying to put the game on ice. That's trying to win the ball game, and I think they made the right decision there. The issue is this team can't find a reasonable kicker that they can depend on. And, I mean, heck, it happens to everybody. You know, people have, you know, fall off a cliff as kickers. Heck, Justin Tucker has been one of the greatest of all time, and look at what's happened to him this year. I get it. It's a volatile position, but, I mean, they haven't had a great kicker in my life, it feels like. You got one for maybe a year, maybe 2 years, and then it all falls apart. And I don't want to hear the D-Hop stuff either. D-Hop sucked too. Like, a lot of these kickers have just sucked.
You're not old enough to remember good old Chip Lowmiller, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, it's a volatile position, a lot like quarterback. Somehow Washington, at least it seems like they figured a quarterback out, but they can't figure kicker out. They can't figure it out. Maybe they need to give EB a call. I see EB tweet that video of him making a kick. Maybe they need to give EB a call. I don't know that he can knock it through from 54, though. I think he could make a 30-yarder from the video, but regardless, they've got to figure that out. They need one because it's such an important position to be able to put 3 points on the board from all over the place, and they can't do it. They can't do it right now. Let's take a break. When we come back, there's a new scenario that I want to talk about that's a little intriguing and could shape the playoff picture. Washington needs to make it in. We understand the importance of these games tonight, but is there something new that over these final 3 weeks that you could be rooting for? I want to lay that out for you next. You're listening to Overtime on The Fan. Welcome back. Final couple minutes here in overtime before we turn it over to some Caps hockey here on The Fan. So there's a new scenario that I was just thinking about because feels like we've kind of established that the top two seeds in the NFC were going to be the Eagles and the Lions in whatever order, right? I mean, that kind of seems like that's got to be the case. Maybe not. Maybe not. With the Lions lost yesterday, they are now 12-2. I don't think people realize, but if Minnesota wins tonight, which is likely because they're playing the Chicago Bears, they would be 12-2 as well. Now, the Lions would still hold the tiebreaker because they're 4-0 in the division. The Vikings, if they won tonight, would be 3-1.
How are they head-to-head?
The Vikings schedule, I'm not sure. The Vikings down the stretch, let's see, Detroit beat them earlier in the season, 31-29. But they play again in Week 18. And so,
that could be
down the
one.
Stretch, exactly. And down the stretch for Minnesota, it's a lot more difficult than Detroit. Seattle next week, which maybe that's Sam Howell-led Seattle, and that's a little bit easier. But it'd be Seattle on the road against Green Bay at home, and then on the road at Detroit. So that's not an easy schedule the rest of the way for Minnesota, which they've already locked up a playoff spot too. But for Detroit, on the road at Chicago, on the road at San Francisco, and then home versus Minnesota to finish the season. The reason I bring this up is currently where Washington is in the playoff standings. They're the 7th seed, and they're still a game behind the Packers because the Packers won yesterday. There's a good possibility that Washington just stays at the 7th seed, and that's where they're stuck because right now Seattle's behind them at 8-6. But the Rams are also 8-6, so whoever does not win the NFC West is going to finish right behind Washington, likely. Arizona's at 7-7. If the Falcons win tonight, then they're still in it at 7-7. But either way, those teams are two games back. So Washington's likely to stay at the 7th seed. Right now, they would face Philadelphia on the road in the wild card round because they're 12-2. And so that can change. Maybe Philly gets up to the 1 seed. What if Detroit were to falter a little bit? Hear me out on this. And I think this is where it could get exciting and something you could root for down the stretch here. What if Detroit were to lose two out of their last three? And one of those is to Minnesota. And Minnesota wins the division. Minnesota, if they finished behind the Eagles, would then be the 2 seed. Because right now the 3 seed is Tampa Bay. And they're not going to catch up with whoever ends up 2nd in the NFC North. That might be your easiest route to
a Bears, right?
They are. I'm not saying it's likely, but it's something you could root for, Chris, because right now, if that's the case.
Let me tell you, my girl is a Lions fan, and I ain't rooting for that. Let me tell you.
Well, the other thing, too, is like if you're a Lions fan, it really doesn't matter. You want to be at home. That's the most important thing. But just get in. You'll beat any of these teams aside from maybe Philly. But you'd like to have the home field advantage. But the point is here, if you're a Washington fan, maybe you want the scenario to be that you have to go on the road to Minnesota versus having to possibly go on the road to Detroit or to Philadelphia. I actually wouldn't mind going to Philly. They probably would beat you. They'd be favored pretty heavily, but it'd be your third time facing them, and anything can happen. Not saying you for sure would beat them, but you'd feel decent about your shot. But if you gave me the option of those three, which one would I want to do? I'd most likely want to go on the road to Minnesota over going to Detroit or going to Philadelphia. The least likely one I'd want to do is go on the road to Detroit. So you either want them to end up as the one seed or you want Minnesota to beat them out. To me, I wouldn't want to go and face Detroit. I'd much rather. But at this point, too, would you? Detroit's offense is a juggernaut, and they're going to score a lot of points. It doesn't matter who they face, even with losing Montgomery now. That defense is all in the hospital, essentially. That defense is ravaged by injuries. They had multiple yesterday. Aleem McNeil torn ACL. He's now done for the season. On offensive side, also still on the defensive side, Carlton Davis is done with a broken jaw. He's going to have surgery on that. You're obviously still going to be without Aiden Hutchinson. They've got so many injuries. Anzalone. Offensive side, they just lost Montgomery for the rest of the season. I don't know that you want to face the Lions, but you also wouldn't feel as bad facing this Lions team as you would the Lions team from a couple of months ago, right? Like, this Lions team's not the same because they're just missing dudes. Like, and it's not just one or two. It's a lot of them, and they're in key spots. But to me, Chris, I know you don't necessarily want that because you don't want to have to deal with it for you personally. But as a Washington fan, I think it's something that's intriguing to monitor down the stretch here, because that is something where we've talked about how do you feel about this team. And to me, this team feels a lot like what you saw happen with the Dolphins last year, where this team probably gets into the playoffs, and I don't think they win a game. And it felt like that with the Dolphins last year, where whenever they played somebody bad, they won. Whenever they played somebody good, they lost. Washington, to me, feels a little bit like that.
Dolphins also played negative 30-degree game in Kansas City last year, right? Like,
they did, but they were still going to lose regardless.
Sure, like, but they hadn't beaten anybody. There's one game that you could kind of expect the Dolphins to falter at.
Absolutely, but they also just hadn't beaten anybody all year. There's also nothing wrong, too. You know, people are going to immediately go, oh, Toby's criticizing. There's nothing wrong with it. It's the first year they weren't supposed to be anywhere. So I'm not worried about the fact that they might not be a team that wins a playoff game. But you want to win a playoff game? I like their chances against Minnesota a whole lot more than against Philadelphia or Detroit. And before yesterday, it sure felt like if they ended up with the 7 seed, their only two options were Detroit or Philadelphia. Maybe Minnesota deserves to be in that mix. And heck, I mean, if that's the case, you'd take your shot there over having to go to Detroit, over having to go to Philadelphia. That's going to do it for us. The Capitals are coming up next as they're in Dallas to take on the Stars. Appreciate our guy Heavy Metal Chris doing all the hard work back in the studio. A couple of days solo on the G&D show. I don't think people understand how difficult that is. Heck of a job by Chris the last couple of days working behind the scenes. That's going to do it for us. Appreciate you listening. Caps and Stars up next.